there's this little movie, a TV, made for TV movie coming on called Logan's Run. And so I was running around telling all these kids in, second grade, whatever, oh, there's going to be like a Star Wars type movie on tonight. It's so exciting. It's called Logan's Run. It's going to be just like Star Wars. And Farrah Fawcett, Lee Majors' wife's going to be in it. And Farrah Fawcett, I was just telling everybody, I can't believe Farrah Fawcett's going to be in this little made for TV movie. So I'm just telling that to all the kids all day. I get home, have to wait till 8 o'clock, and then that whatever it is, Sunday or Tuesday night movie, whatever the hell it was. And it's Logan's Run, which was kind of a dumb, I didn't know it was dumb, I was too young. And then Farrah Fawcett comes on, and there's Lee Majors' wife right there, Farrah Fawcett. She's one of Charlie's Angels. There she is. And she dies within the first 5 minutes of the movie. And I was on my knees, watching the TV screen, and they go to a commercial break, and I just hang my head, and I'm like, I can't believe she's dead after only 5 minutes. And my dad gets up from his chair and is walking to the kitchen to get his pretzels or whatever, the pretzels and beer or whatever the hell. And as he's walking by, he goes, yeah, she's such a terrible actress, they couldn't afford her any more screen time than 5 minutes. And he just keeps on walking, and I was totally crushed. I mean, later I realized what a funny line it was, but I was just totally crushed. So this is the 70s versus 80s, the podcast that asks you, did you ever get over the embarrassment of the assistant school lunch lady having to help you open your little carton of milk in front of all the other kids? Jim, did you ever have that happen?
I did not, but I hear it happened to somebody that I know.
Yeah, I think I tried opening the wrong side, the side that didn't have the little arrow on it, or I hate when you tried to open it and it would peel like you'd only get one layer of that cardboard carton open.
Yeah, and if you try to open the wrong end, it's a scrap because you're not going to get it, and you might as well just go up there and hand it in because you're done. I mean, if you start the other side, it's over with.
It makes me feel like Joey and Friends. Remember when he did the infomercial where he's like, it's so hard to open milk, and he had the open, and
I
everybody.
didn't. I remember that.
And then he sees a hot late girl at the bar, and she's like, "You're the guy that can't open milk."
Watching that show, do you ever go back and watch that now? It's horrible. It's horrible.
Well, we're supposed to ban it now because they make fun of they use what do they say? They say gay all the time, and then they make fun of fat people. But it's different. It's
Yeah.
cha things change over time. But no, I mean, I think it's a pretty good show to have on in the background. You can't watch it from beginning to end, but
But
what was the
some of
little
the
start?
actors.
Didn't you have a story about one of our classmates from Eton School Lunch?
Yes, should I name him though? I feel bad about naming him.
Yeah, he's probably not listening.
All right. So, if any Rosemont people are out there, Troy Hoyer, in elementary school, I was kind of new to the school district. I didn't know him, and I didn't know why people weren't sitting next to him. And so I felt bad. And so I sat next to him. And as I got to talking to him, I realized pretty decent kid, good kid. But he would vomit into his hands every day at lunch. And I'd say, Troy, dude, why are you vomiting into your hands? And he said, I'm allergic to milk. And I the slow pan over to his milk carton is open and half drank. So I let that go for a couple of beats. And I said, well, what, why are you drinking the milk if it makes you vomit? And he said, well, because you never know, sometimes it doesn't. And I said, okay, solid answer. And you know, Troy kind of kept to himself, but he was successful in the military, went to the army, and he, you know, I've seen some of his army stuff, and I guess he was kicking ass and taking names in the army. So I'm glad for him.
I believe him. I believe that because I saw him years later, and I was actually reading instructions to Yar's Revenge. I was walking through a parking lot, and I was looking down, reading the instructions to it. And I look up and I see Troy standing there, and I see him kind of like frozen, like that famous Bigfoot picture where he's like mid stride. And so I look down at my instructions again, and then I go, and my brain said, "Did I really see that?" And I look up and he's completely gone. I just look down for a second, and I look up and he's gone. And I'm swiveling my head and I couldn't see him. So I think he probably was pretty good in the army. He could probably, I think he was, and he was, I knew he was really into ninjas, and I think he was doing a ninja trick on me there. So
he was really into ninjas, and he was doing it out of a book, and he evidently became good at him. If you looked up and you saw like a Patterson Gimlin of him, mm-hmm. and then looked down, looked back up again, then he was vanished. I believe that too, and he probably was a ninja.
And how much into ninjas was he, you might ask? In home economics, we had to sew ourselves some sweatpants. He sewed himself an entire ninja outfit instead.
Oh, are you serious?
I am serious.
Sweet. So, Troy, if you are listening, call one of us, and our numbers are online, or mine is, and catch up, because every time I write you on Facebook, you don't answer. Or one, you know, one word answer.
Maybe he's trying to tell you something there, Jim. So that, so we heard, listening to that Bee Gees at the beginning kind of got me into that roller rink. And that always reminded me, remember, we went to, what was it called? Skateville, I believe. Is that where we went roller skating at?
I think it was Skateville there in Apple Valley. Yes, I believe that was the name of it.
And then, but that reminded, like every town, all they had was, most people had skate land in their town. We had Skateville. Some people had Skate City. Pretty original names there, don't you think?
I know. It was always some sort of a play on words for either skate or the wheels or whatever. So
surprise game for you too, Jim. Let's see. Do you remember what this annoying sound is here? Hang on a second. Does that sound familiar?
It sounds like an Atari game. Was it Breakout or something?
That was actually...
Or Coleco Football.
That was a Mike Tyson Nintendo game, Mike Tyson Punch-Out. Remember that game?
Remember it? I didn't have that one.
Okay, so then you're not going to do very good on this game. I'm going to do this real quick. Here's the characters in the game, but one of them's not really there, okay? One of them's not, okay. And you got to guess which one's not a real Mike Tyson Punch-Out character. So we got Glass Joe, King Hippo, Little Mac, Johnny Lawrence, Bald Bull, Von Kaiser, or Super Macho Man. Which one of those is not a Mike Tyson character? Or Mike Tyson?
I remember, knock him out, body blow. That was Glass Joe. I'm going to say, what was the last one again? Macho Man Randy Savage. That is not a Tyson character.
Though they actually had a Macho Man on there, the one that was not was I said Johnny Lawrence, and Johnny Lawrence was of course he's famous right now on Cobra Kai, but he was the blonde kid on Karate Kid, the arch rival.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I thought you'd catch that one. Okay, but that was I forgot how bad those sound effects were for that game.
All right, so Michael, we've been tossing little things back and forth on what we think would be a nice, you know, way to move into summer here with a topic. And we came up with boxing, but we came up with sex symbols because it's summer is coming up. And so obviously that's something that we're looking at, but I think we should save that for a little bit later. And right now I'll talk about boxing, you know, the 70s versus the 80s and sort of how it progressed and changed from the 70s and the 80s, and what made it sort of meld into a sport that has gone wild since, you know, the mid 80s, you know, the early 80s probably. So What are your thoughts about that? Because I know what you're going to say.
What do you think? What am I going to say?
Well, I know what you're going to say, that made boxing way more popular in the end of the 70s, moving in towards the 80s. You're going to say some event made it explode, whether it was a media event or what would you think?
That made it explode from the 70s to the 80s.
I mean, it was always a sport, but I mean, what made it huge in the USA in the end of the 70s into the 80s?
Well, I think I would say, and it would be Muhammad Ali, and then we've talked about him many times before, Howard Cosell, kind of that ABC wide news or wide world of sports that they would always have the fights on. I think that was everything. Is that what you thought I was gonna say, or?
Well, let me give you one more hint, and let's see if you can. I'm thinking it was more of a media driven thing, because there's always good boxers, but there was something that everybody was exposed to in the media that
Oh,
made it huge.
the Rocky movies?
That is correct. You are correct, sir.
All right.
Ring a get a bell. I have a. One of these maraca things. We don't have a bell, so or do you have one? That's where I was going with this. You know, you've got a guy, Sylvester Stallone, who wrote that script, and I'm on my third one, so I know exactly how difficult that is. But he aces this first one, sends that in. It explodes into the Rocky series, which I think they're coming out with Rocky 47, rotting in the casket, it's going to be called. Rocky 47, rotting in the casket. But those,
47 and a half.
yeah, 47 and a half. Okay, I'm writing that down. But don't you think, though? I mean, really, it was always a huge sport, but don't you think the media gave that sport a huge push?
And that's kind of where we're doing 70s versus 80s, and that's what I kind of think of the 70s. People forget boxing was as big as or bigger than the NFL. I mean, when there's a big fight, it was like a playoff game in the NFL is today. I mean, it was huge. And and I think it was all Muhammad Ali. Those Rocky movies were coming out at the exact same time. I mean, it was just a whirlwind of, I think people forget how big boxing was in the 70s and still into the 80s. And
Yeah, I agree.
I think it was the personalities. It was Howard Cosell and, and Ali and all the fighters he went against. And
Yep,
Sugar
I
Ray Leonard
agree.
was kind of more of an 80s guy. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think those commercials for 7-Up when Sugar Ray Leonard were doing them, was doing them. I don't remember if that was in the 70s or the 80s. I don't even remember. But do you remember that commercial?
Yeah.
And he had a son on there. But what you brought up about Ali and Cosell, and guys like you and me who have seen that movie, we know, and I found out for the first time in that movie that Ali and Cosell were actually close friends. And Ali was pressuring him to quit the sport because you could see that he was, his brain was going on him. I will say that Muhammad Ali outlived him, but you know what I mean. He told him, there's no reason to do this, champ. You just don't have to do it. And he did it anyway. So that relationship, I think you're right. With the Rocky movies, yeah, I agree with you that, boxing was huge, but when the Rocky movies came out, it exposed a lot of younger people to the sport. And that's when I started following it, is when I started watching those Rocky movies. I thought, hey, this is kind of exciting.
Well, and and I know I kind of beat this like a dead horse, but it was on Wide World of Sports. It was free. We could all watch it. And now boxing is like 50, 75 bucks just to watch it, and it's always late at night. Kids aren't going to be as accessible to it. It was just a different time. Like I said, I think it was seriously. It was one of the first television sports because they could use one camera and they could film the whole ring, whereas baseball and golf were pretty hard just when TV first came out to film and stuff. So it was always a big sport, and I mean we did a show on wrestling. Wrestling was huge back then too, you know, the professional wrestling and boxing, because like I said, they were easy to cover with the camera. And yeah.
It's such a different world today. And it makes me sad. I remember when I was a kid growing up in Eagan, Minnesota, we never had air conditioning at my house. We had these big trees that were over the top of it, and we would sweat it out. But going to bed at night on an August night, and you had a little black and white TV, and you're watching the, you know, whatever sport was on. You were laying in bed soaked in sweat, the whippoorwills were going. I just loved that time. I don't know why, but
Yeah.
anyway, back then you could, like Mike says, like you say, Mike, you could turn on a Sunday or a Saturday, whatever it was, and there would be even the outdoor stadiums, they'd have boxing rings, you know, and they would start the shot out from way back above on the, you know, and then they would start pulling in on these guys. And I miss that. I just miss that part of the sport, because everything today is for money and to show somebody's logo or to, you know, to somehow make somebody money. It just isn't the same anymore.
Yep, exactly. And so I think we're gonna kind of title this Muhammad Ali versus Mike Tyson, kind of the 70s versus the 80s. And Mike Tyson came in, and that was, I think, I don't remember if his first fights were, yeah, because his fights were pay-per-view, because people get mad because he had all the knockouts in the first round. I remember that.
I don't know if that was, you might be able to answer that. Was that so when he was, you know, just coming into the sport, or was it just
Yes.
after he kind of
Yeah.
gotten some success?
He was the at 20 years old and 4 months and 22 days, he was the youngest. He had the record for the youngest boxer to win a heavyweight title. So that was basically from 87 to 90. Tyson won his first 19 professional fights by knockout, 12 of them in the first round. So he knocked up, he had So I didn't think it was 12. I knew it was a lot, but that's a lot to win in the first
Yeah.
round.
Wow. And you know, back then Tyson was still, he still had his wits about him, so he'd knock a guy out and, you know, the guy would be, you know, putting his brain back in his head, and you know, Tyson would help him up and hug him, and I saw him give guys kiss on the cheek before. And who was this trainer? Was it Lou Duca or the guy, what's his name that did Ali? I can't remember.
No, it wasn't Angela Dundee that did Ali. It was he's a real famous trainer, and he just I wish I knew his name right now, because he just like
Customato.
yeah he just happened to be in a gym, and he saw Tyson, I think, walk in when he was 12 or 13 or 14, and they just like happened to be in the same place at the same time, and this guy, and then he started fighting Tyson as a 14-year-old, and he'd bring him to these underage fights. And the guy, and they're like, "How old is he?" And he's like, "He's 14, and he wants to fight this 17-year-old." And they go, "He's not 14." And they go, "Oh," and then Customato will go, "Okay, he's 16. He still wants to fight this 17-year-old. What difference does it make?" So,
Yeah,
yeah. So, and
exactly.
he would just whip the guy. And but looking at the two, I was really surprised. I just thought, you know, you think of Mike Tyson as kind of having a career that flamed out, which it kind of did. You know, he came on, like we just said, how dominating he was right at the beginning. But looking at him and Muhammad Ali, their records are very similar. Muhammad Ali's total record was 56 wins, 5 losses, 37 knockouts. He won 37 of them by knockout. And then Tyson was 50 wins, 6 losses, and 44 knockouts. So he had more knockouts, had a slightly, almost the same amount of losses for the two guys. It was just, I thought Ali's career was a lot longer, and I know they used to fight more back then too. Like now they fight like once every 10 months, like once a year. Back then, they used to fight a lot more.
You know, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've always heard this about Tyson, that he was looking for a way to feel better about himself and also to defend himself, because he had kind of a lisp and he was kind of slight. You know, he would get, you know, whatever, mobbed in the way from school or whatever it was, and he had that lisp that he had. And so he was pissed off at the world, and he had had a bad childhood or whatever, and he went into boxing to learn some ways to defend himself or whatever. And after Customato got a hold of him, though, and started, you know, putting all his talent in the right places, it was just a monstrous time for boxing. You didn't even have to watch the fight, because if Tyson was going to fight, he was going to win. And, you know, I don't know how many fights he had until he met Buster Douglas, but
yeah,
by the time he met Buster Douglas, you know, it was already at a point where, you know, he was starting to slow down because of all kinds of legal shit going on.
Yeah, and I think he just is the classic, almost like the Rocky storyline. He just kind of underestimated Buster Douglas, and Buster Douglas, his mom had just passed away, and he kind of was inspired in that fight. And it's really the only good fight that Buster Douglas ever fought, because I think he lost the championship on the next fight he fought. He really only had that one good fight, and he fought great, so give him credit for that. But yeah, so he just kind of ran into somebody. He was kind of overestimating his powers. It was like a 75-1 win in Vegas on that fight.
Yeah, the only people who had money on Buster Douglas were family members who got rich. And here's the thing, though. I don't know how many fights Tyson did after the whole legal trouble thing, or the whole flame out that you referred to earlier. He had a flame out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is the thing, is that boxers who hung in there and kept on fighting after that start to have problems, like Ledoux had, and like Ali had, and other fighters had. Tyson, I mean, because of his behavior, he had to start slowing down just because he was in jail.
Yeah.
And it actually cut. And so when he got out, he wasn't the same fighter anymore, in my opinion. And he started, you know, it started being a, you know, a toss up in terms of who was going to win. But I think that added some years to his life, because he didn't get as much. Maybe he wasn't going to anyway because of his power or whatever. But it's nice to see a boxer grow old with you that isn't as punchy.
Yeah. And I mean, he just fought like a couple months ago. I don't know if you saw that fight.
It
was a little sad, but I mean, he looked okay. I mean,
looked okay, but he wouldn't have a chance, you know, with I don't think he ever had a chance, even when he met Holyfield or did he fight Lennox Lewis? I can't remember.
He fought Michael. I think he did. Yeah, he fought Lennox Lewis. He did fight Larry Holmes. He fought Michael Spinks.
There you go. I think Spinks beat him too, right?
I believe so. Yeah. And Holyfield. And, I can't remember what his record was within Holyfield. And they, I think they split the first two. I think Holyfield won the first one, I believe.
Saying that, I was watching the fight with Tyson when he bit Holyfield's ear off, and my dad and I looked at each other, and we both said at the exact same time, "This is when the top of the apex starts going downhill," and that it seems like exactly what happened.
I was just that point, like you said, that was the apex for Tyson. I thought he was pretty good in The Hangover. He was a pretty good actor there.
That was great. You know, Tyson has moments like that, because he'll have moments like that, and then he'll have other moments where he's being interviewed and he doesn't like the question. And he said, "Well, your mama is a C word, and I'm gonna, you know," it's like, why do you have to go there just because you don't like the question?
Yeah, and he's just he's different. Like, yeah, he's just a different guy. He's very competitive. And I know Joe Rogan had him on twice, and the first time he had him on, and he, you know, he was obviously retired, and he was like a mellow, super sweet, super nice guy talking about his pigeons and everything. And then they had him on when he was training for this latest fight, you know, this comeback fight we were just talking about, and he said Rogan was terrified of him. He said he scared him.
Really?
Yeah, and he
Did
said
he give an example of why?
Well, no, he wasn't terrified of him. He just said, like, he was making a new studio And like Tyson was, they were like 32 inches apart, and then they go in the new studio, we're gonna have the table be 28 inches wide, and he's like, no, keep it 32 in case Tyson comes back. He goes, I didn't need to be any closer to him or whatever. So, wow.
Awesome.
So yeah, so Tyson had that break because of prison. Going back to Muhammad Ali, he had the four best years of his career where they wouldn't let him fight, basically protesting the Vietnam War. And he came back and after 4 years off, and kind of fought Joe Frazier a little early there. You know, he didn't take enough easy opponents at right away like he should have. And so he had trouble. You know, Frazier knocked him down in that fight, and it was just amazing. He had the four best years of his career off, and you know, to do what he, you know, to still be pretty much considered the greatest fighter of all time. You know, right when he had the prime of his career taken away from him.
Did
Just
he get drafted? I don't know why, I just remember him in an army uniform. Did he have to go to basic training for anything, or did he avoid it the whole thing altogether?
I thought he avoided the whole thing altogether, but
I don't know why I was thinking
maybe we're
that,
thinking
but
of Elvis in a uniform, but I don't
I
know, but
remember Elvis. I remember that, but anyway. The thing with Ali is that I only remember, sort of the autumn of his career. I think the first time I can remember a fight was like around 1980 at a paper route, and I would, get up at 4:30 in the morning and walk out to get my papers a quarter mile away, and I would just sit and walk and read the sports section before I left on my route. I remember in that time when. Like Sugar Ray Leonard, we were talking about, and then Muhammad Ali just got killed in a fight, and I thought, oh, that's the end of that.
Huh. No, that it's some of my earliest memories. I remember my grandpa had a sports bar that he owned, and I think it was one of the Frazier fights. And they had these little, it's not like sports, they had black and white TVs up in every corner. And they were probably like 22 inch or 27 inch, you know, that's what a sports bar was in the 70s. And I was so little, my grandpa was carrying me around and having, he was introducing me to all his friends, and I was shaking their hands. And then I could see the fight, and I was like, now I want to watch the fight. I could see it starting in the background, and then on the black and white TV. And I don't remember if it was George Foreman or Joe Frazier. It was probably Frazier, but it was one of the fights. I'm sure, I know it wasn't the first one. I must have been 4 or 5 years old. But so that's one of my earliest memories. And I had the action, I had the Muhammad Ali action figure, which I'm trying to buy on eBay now, but they want a lot of money for it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
but I think the difference between Ali and Tyson, and it's not really Tyson's fault, but Muhammad Ali, like I said, he fought Joe Frazier, he fought George Foreman, he fought Ken Norton. And then Tyson had some good names like Larry Holmes, Michael Spinks, Evander Holyfield. You know, those guys were no joke. But I think it's just a theory I heard somebody say, and I'm just kind of stealing it. Is like, you know, the 70s had all these great heavyweight boxers, and then in the 80s, the NFL started paying really well, and then, you know, the heavyweight division, you know, it's starting to make a little comeback now. Tyson Fury and the Klitschko brothers, but they're, you know, a lot of them are from Europe and stuff. So, you know, it's just the Americans, they could get more playing in the NFL, you know, get paid more and not be quite as violent of a sport. So I don't know if that had a difference, because, you know, the middleweights are still really exciting. It's just the heavyweights aren't, you know, as big as they used to be. And I, you know, some people blame the NFL. I don't know if that's true or not, but what do you think?
There's so many more athletes in the NFL and versus what's in boxing. I would have to agree with you. I think that's got to be a huge, they're a huge draw. Do you mean or no?
Yeah, I just think the heavyweight division is just kind of, you know, the NFL is just kind of eating all that. All those athletes have gone to the NFL. You know, they can play Pop Warner football. They grow up playing football, and you know, it's how many kids grow up boxing anymore? Just kind of the inner city at these times. You know, there's not boxing gyms out in the suburbs. I guess they're starting to come back a little bit, but I don't know if they're full contact or not. But yeah, so I think it's just an easier avenue to get into. So.
And you're right, but it's just a different world nowadays with transportation being, you know, more accessible, maybe not cheaper for those who can't afford it, but at least more accessible. And you're right, it's a whole different world now. And those athletes, like you say, they're getting eaten up by the NFL. Not all of them, but.
So, okay. So what else? You got anything else to say about Ollie versus Tyson, 70s versus 80s unboxing?
One more thing.
Go for it.
Okay, so I just kind of touched on it a little bit, but when I was talking earlier about how Muhammad Ali, and even earlier than that, Cassius Clay, started to grow this relationship with Cosell. And Cosell, I think, gave him a voice that not only did Cosell not give other athletes and boxers, but that Muhammad Ali, you know, guys like him didn't do as much before him. But I think it became a huge draw for viewers because he was so entertaining to watch. And this thing between he and Ali with the hairpiece and all that kind of stuff, it was so entertaining to watch. And then as it grew, Muhammad Ali grew with his, you know, with his rhyming and with his, you know, how, what do you call it? What's that word for, you know, when he's absolutely certain he's going to just fucking destroy everybody?
Oh, his confidence, yeah.
Yeah, confidence, yeah. I mean, he was just amazing. And that whole theater that he created with Cosell was amazing. I don't know, did you see that with Tyson?
No, Tyson was scary. He would come in, you know, he'd just wear that little black towel. He was, you know, didn't even wear the silky robe that, like, Ollie wore. And he would just kind of, there were different guys. Tyson was scary. He was like the villain. He was more like the Mr. T character on the Rocky movies. And, and you know, and Ollie was more, obviously more accessible. And we talked about this on the other shows, the one where we did the superstars, you know, I don't think there was never going to be, when Howard Cosell died, we're like, who's going to replace him? And we got our answer. Nobody's ever replaced Howard Cosell. And, and Muhammad Ali was voted the greatest athlete of the 20th century by Sports Illustrated, the sports personality of the century by the BBC, third greatest athlete of the 20th century. And third is way too low. He should be better unless they're going with Jim Thorpe and Jesse Owens, I guess. I don't know who else it would be, but yeah. So
What would you say right now this is what I think if Ali were to meet Tyson. This is my thoughts. Tyson, pardon me?
No, go ahead. Yeah, they do have a lot of this discussion on the internet. I want to hear what you say.
Well, this is kind of my thoughts. You know, Tyson is kind of built like a firebug. He's like, you know, what is he, 5'8" or whatever, 5'9"? Is that what
about? I want to say he's 5'9", so yeah, right in there, yep.
And the guy is, he was kind of like the Herschel Walker of boxing. He was kind of a north-south guy. I mean, he wasn't doing a lot of this kind of stuff. He was a north-south guy, and he was a bull you over guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could move around if he had to, but that's typically what I think of when I think of him. Now, Muhammad Ali, not only was Ali taller, but I think Ali was quicker, and he was harder to hit and harder to get. And if it were me putting money on it, I would put money on Ali just because he's faster, and he would fluster guys with that. I mean, we're talking right now at their prime, each at their prime.
Mm-hmm.
Ali would fluster guys with his speed and with that jab, and he would go to his left, and he would go to his right, and fight southpaw, and all these kinds of things, and guys would get out of their game, and that was his whole strategy. I'm going to get this guy out of his game, and he did. So unless his guard was down or whatever, Tyson came in with something catastrophic like he would do. I would put my money on Ali. What would you
say? Yeah, that's a really good take. My thing, I even simplify it more. If Ali got, you know, we talked about Tyson, 12 of his, won his first 19 fights by knockout, 12 of them in the first round. If Ali got through the second round, it would be, Ollie would win. Yeah, if he survived the first two rounds, it'd be Ollie would win. I'm sure of it.
I would say, yeah, that's perfect. I would say the first three rounds, if there was a bell for the opening of the fourth round, then it would be on Ollie, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was kind of researching this on the internet. It was like they were asking all the boxers of today and yesterday, and it was something like 80 to 90% of them were picking Ali, which is a little, I think that's a little high. I mean, Tyson, he's just a beast. I mean, he was nothing like him ever before, you know? So, but yeah, I think
he was, but I don't think there were very many opponents that he fought that you'd think of as, you know, a Muhammad Ali type of boxer. I think if he would have met some of those guys, it wouldn't have been such a one-sided thing. But I could be, you know, I'm not a huge opinion maker in boxing. So
yeah, it's you know, like it's like trying to pick racehorses, Man of War against Secretariat. It just they were 60 years apart. There's no way to, you can never tell. But yeah, it's a great thing to talk about sports. You know, we can always argue about it. You know.
Yes, that's true. It's Seabiscuit, by the way.
Seabiscuit? You think that would win?
Either Seabiscuit or Cigar. We got to do horse racing.
All right, maybe for the Kentucky Derby or something. We'll do a little something.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah. Did we get everything on boxing?
I think so.
Well, there we go. Unlike a Mike Tyson opponent, we actually made it to the final bell there. That's it for our boxing segment. This next segment, I think in the segment we actually call it sex symbols. That's a little demeaning, I think. I think we should call it celebrity crushes. I was thinking about calling it our favorite pinups, but that's more of a 50s, 60s thing. I know in the 70s we would just always say, who's your favorite Charlie's Angels? That's how we would always say it then. So again, this is our celebrity crushes. I hope it's fun for everybody. Thank you. Ed.
All right. Well, you know, we're trying to think of all these things that we could use to kind of use as a vehicle from the 70s into the 80s. And one of the things that I remember most about the 70s is Farrah Fawcett. You know, Farrah Fawcett got me through a lot of lonely nights. Poster on my wall. There's, you know, as far as sex symbols go, I don't think, I mean, it begins and ends with Farrah Fawcett in that 10 years, into the 80s, maybe something else. But the 70s, it was Farrah in that red bikini. But yeah, Farrah Fawcett in that red bikini, tanned and bronzed with that hair in that red bikini. For me, it begins and ends with her in that decade. I don't know what you think about the 80s.
I agree with Farrah Fawcett. Did you have the Farrah Fawcett poster? I had that in my room.
Yep. Well, we must have cut off. But yeah, I had that poster right up on the wall with the red bikini and the tan skin. I mean, that was the best-selling poster of all time to this day.
if I can tell you my little Farrah Fawcett story. Well, I must have been in third grade, I think it was. And back then, you know, we're just coming off, or maybe it was a little earlier than that. Maybe it was early 80s, but it was, we're just coming up, or maybe it was like 1980, but we're just coming out, you know, Star Wars had been in the theaters. And, and back then, you know, we didn't have DVD, VHS, we didn't have any of that. So they said, there's this little movie, made for TV movie coming on called Logan's Run. And so I was running around telling all these kids in, you know, second grade, whatever, oh, there's going to be like a Star Wars type movie on tonight. It's so exciting. It's called Logan's Run. It's going to be just like Star Wars. And Farrah Fawcett, Lee Majors' wife's going to be in it. And Farrah Fawcett, I was just telling everybody, I can't believe Farrah Fawcett's going to be in this little made-for-TV movie. So I'm just telling that to all the kids all day. I get home, you know, have to wait till 8 o'clock, and then that, whatever it is, Sunday or Tuesday night movie, whatever the hell it was, and it's Logan's Run, which was kind of a dumb, I didn't know it was dumb, I was too young. And then Farrah Fawcett comes on, and there's Lee Majors' wife right there, Farrah Fawcett. She's one of Charlie's Angels. There she is, there she is. And she dies within the first 5 minutes of the movie. And I was on my knees, watching the TV screen. And they go to a commercial break, and I just hang my head, and I'm like, I can't believe she's dead after only 5 minutes. And my dad gets up from his chair and is walking to the kitchen to get his pretzels or whatever, the pretzels and beer, whatever the hell. And as he's walking by, he goes, "Yeah, she's such a terrible actress. They couldn't afford her any more screen time than 5 minutes." And he just keeps on walking, and I was totally crushed. I mean, later I realized what a funny line it was, but I was just totally crushed. So.
I remember the title of the movie, but what was in the, what, give me the gist of what the plot was.
Logan's Run, that was where they killed everybody when they turned 30 years old. So he goes
Oh.
on his 29, when he's 29, he goes on the run, and it's weird they have a creepy dating thing in that movie where he's like, they have like the Star Trek holograms. He's like, "I want to go on a date." So these chicks start, he goes, "Do you want to go on a date?" And she's like, "No, I'm washing my hair." And then another hologram comes on, and I'm like, "Oh my God, they did Tinder like 60 years before Tinder." 'Cause
Wild.
he's like swiping left or right at these holograms about which date he wants or which girl he wants to go out for that night. Yeah.
Wow, dude, that's why I bet you're not the only one that I bet you. Oh man, that's
Look it
just
up on
wild.
YouTube. It's on YouTube. It's just freaky 'cause it's so accurate. It's like from 1980 and they're like predicting like, 2017 or whatever. Just pretty freaky, but yeah.
Who stars in it? Who's in it?
I knew you were gonna ask me that. He's got feathered hair. I don't think he was. I don't think we'd recognize the name if I said it.
I have that picture in my mind of that guy with the feathered hair and the red
Yeah,
hat on in the
he kind of looked
poster.
like a Buck Rogers type.
Yes, I know who you're talking about. I know exactly
Let
who
me
you're
look him
talking
up
about.
right here. Star
Kind of
of.
looks like John Davidson too, kind of
Well,
that
everybody looked
same.
like that back. Everybody had the same hair. Michael York was the star. Do you remember? I don't remember his name at all.
That now, Michael York. Oh, what a time capsule. Wow.
Let me see. He's known for after school specials. He was in a 1968 Romeo and Juliet, The Three Musketeers, Logan's Run. Oh, he's in Austin Powers. I kind of remember his face from Austin Powers, yeah.
You remember the after school special with Linda Blair where she was like she was having a oh she had an eating disorder in that
Oh,
after.
vaguely.
Remember that?
I forgot that was Linda Blair. I vaguely remember that.
Yes. She's a talented actress who fucked herself in over in her first role. After her head spun around one complete rotation, that was done. She was done in Hollywood. It's too bad. She's a talented person and talented actress.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's the person on my list that really opened my eyes is almost as much as nobody would catch Farrah Fawcett. But how about Bo Derek when she was running down the beach in 10?
Yeah. Being filmed, by the way, by her like 40-year-old 40 years older husband,
Yeah.
John Derek.
Yep.
And he was like the guy that would rent his wife out for people to do whatever with, and him to film it and observe it and write shit down and then just get collect money
Yeah, that's
until she
basically
was found.
she was in 1979's Tarzan the Ape Man, and then she was in Bolero, and Bolero was just like soft porn. It was a horrible movie. It was like soft
I
porn,
remember
like you just said, yeah. And then she was
Farrah.
just kind of done. I mean, I don't remember anything else about that, but yeah, I just remember she had those beaded hair and just, oh my gosh, that
Yeah, well,
yellow
before
bikini.
that, I think in the 70s, you had a kind of the American looking, woman. And when Bo Derek came at the end of the 70s, early 80s, whenever that was, she has kind of the Nordic features, the blonde hair and the blue eyes and, tall and thin. Sort of kind of like a Nordic look to her.
Yeah, she was pretty much perfect there. And then my list is pretty 70s heavy, but I think one girl that it from the 80 from 1982 who had the best or most paused. I know when you'd rent this movie, it would kind of break apart because so many people paused it. But was the VHS tape would get paused so much. But was do you remember Phoebe Cates when she was getting out of the pool in Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Do you remember
Who?
that?
What's her name? Oh, Phoebe Cates.
Phoebe,
Yeah,
yeah, I always
I
say her
heard.
name wrong. Phoebe Cates,
Yeah.
yeah.
I was like, who is her? Yeah, Phoebe. Yes, I remember her. Again, dark hair, dark eyes, American looking.
Yeah, that
Yes.
scene was just classic. And then again after that she was in Gremlins and Gremlins 2, and I don't think that was anything else really. I don't know.
What was the name of that first movie, Mike, that she was in?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
That's Fast Times. Oh, gosh, it's a blast from the past. Caddyshack and the one with John Belushi, Animal House, and all those kind of things, movies coming in that time. And that was the birth of VHS, going down and renting those movies.
Yeah, exactly. So, who do you have on? I just gave a couple on my list. Who do you have on your list? Do you think of anybody else?
The sex symbol.
Yeah.
I think in the 70s you got Raquel Welch.
Yeah, that's very solid. Very solid. Yes.
And she is a beautiful actress that also, or I mean a beautiful model that can also act.
Yeah.
And you don't always get that, I don't think.
Yeah.
I guess you can consider Pam Anderson 80s. If you want to go backwards in the 70s, my gosh, who else was huge in the 70s?
I have a couple lesser known seven. Well, I would go Lonnie Anderson, who was born in St. Paul. She was WKRP in Cincinnati. And then again, she was with her husband and Stoker Ace, Burt Reynolds, and then I don't really remember. I don't know what else she really did with her career too much after that. But I have a couple lesser known 70s. I'm thinking of Adriana Barbeau. Remember her from Maude? And she was in all the John Carpenter. She was married to John Carpenter. Why is everybody married to their director? But yeah, she was in all
No,
the
I
John
don't.
Carpenter movies like Escape from New York, and she was in Swamp Thing. And do you remember her, Adrienne Barbeau?
No, I don't. I'm not getting it.
Oh, you would know her if you saw her face. She was in Maude and
What's her
yeah,
name again, Mikey?
Adrienne Barbeau.
Okay, I'm writing it down.
You gotta remember her. And then another one you probably don't remember is Bernadette Peters. She was in
Oh,
the
Bernadette Peters. She's hot.
yeah, she was in The Longest Yard and The Jerk. And then I love when she was in The Longest Yard and she just had that huge hair, curly hair, and then and Burt Reynolds comes in and takes one look at her and he goes, "Do you ever find any spiders in that thing?" It's just.
She had her mouth was too small for her face. I don't know why I feel that. When you look at
Yeah.
her, she's got
Yeah.
she was beautiful, especially that curly hair. I used to get her mixed up with what was the lady in in Young Frankenstein?
That wasn't her.
Not
Maybe that
Julie
I thought that
Carr.
was her.
Is that Madeline Kahn, I think?
Let me look up a second
It
here.
was Madeline Kahn for some reason.
Just give me a second to Google it. I thought it was her though. I thought it was Bernadette Peters.
Might be. I was just thinking it was Madeline Kahn.
Young Frankenstein cast. Here we go. Oh, you I think you're right though. It was there was Cloris Leachman was in it. Terry Carr was in it.
Harry Gar,
Oh, you're
yeah.
right. It was Madeline Kahn.
She's all afraid of the Frankenstein until they go out and she's getting laid and then she changes her mind. Ooh, nice knockers.
God.
What a great movie. Okay, if anybody's, I know somebody's listening, but to all of our listeners, we don't require much of you if you aren't paying us. That means all of you. And since that's the case, we require very little of you, but one of the things is that we make you watch certain movies, and this might turn into a thing every week, I think, that we make our listeners do. But Slapshot was one of the early ones. Today, though, and Mike might have his own, but today I require all of you to, at some point between now and our next show, to watch Young Frankenstein. You will not be displeased. It's a Mel Brooks joint. It's old, but it holds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people in it that you will recognize and know. And what do you think about that, Mike? I mean, is that a solid pick?
Very solid pick, yeah. We should almost consider covering that on a Halloween episode next year or something.
Good idea. I'm writing that down. I save all my notes for every show. Yep. No, we don't ask much of people, Mike, do we?
No, that's a good pick. Good. And then I was trying to think of any of the, you know, we covered, you know, like Lonnie Anderson kind of went a little bit from the 70s into the 80s, but I was trying to think who really reinvented themselves from the 70s to the 80s. And I got, It's kind of, you know, not talking sex symbol because she was just a little girl, but when Janet Jackson played Penny in Good Times, we saw her there. And then the next time we see her, it's 1989, and it's that Rhythm Nation where she's wearing that black hat, all dressed in all black, and she was just beautiful. And I couldn't believe she's that little girl from Penny and Good Times. Yeah.
That's solid. Yeah, she was so cute in that show. Oh, I had a crush on her in that show. I mean, I think, you know, Michael did a nice job of reinventing himself, but I think, you know, he just got weird.
Yeah.
He just got so strange. Gosh, I could probably think of some. You caught me off guard there. You got any others while I think going?
Well, no, I was just kind of thinking, I don't know how I even feel about this pick, but I was thinking we had all actresses, and I was trying to think of rock stars. So then when you think of sex symbol rock star from this era, you have to go to Madonna. I don't know if she's like a classic beauty, but she did play the part of a sex symbol.
Madonna?
What do you think of Madonna?
In the conversation of 70s versus 80s or what?
Yeah, just being a sex symbol in that time, do you think she ranks up there?
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I thought we were on reinventing. Going back to reinventing real quick, one of the guys that I got is John Travolta. I mean, huge, huge star, and then all that disco shit ended, and he was asleep until Quentin Tarantino woke him up.
Yeah, yep, exactly. That's probably the most famous, you know, and Quentin Tarantino's famous for that, for bringing everybody back. He even had like Tom Wopat, or he had one of the Dukes, Tom Wopat, and was in one of his movies. Django Unchained had one of the Duke boys in it, so he really brings back those old.
Oh, that's right. You're right, Tom Wopat. And then, what's the name of that guy that was in Jackie Brown? He played the bail bondsman in Jackie Brown.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. Give me a second.
I gotta look up his name, but he's one of my favorites.
I've been talking about him like nonstop, and now I just can't remember his name all of a sudden.
Can't either.
I mean, because I've just been talking about him he just came back. Robert Frost. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was just in, he was in El Camino when they kind of did, right before he died. I think it showed after he died when they were doing the Breaking Bad sequel, kind of. And, yeah, so he was great in that. So, and he was kind of in Breaking Bad, they kind of wanted him to play the same character. He was a little bit of the same Max Cherry type character that he played in Jackie Brown.
Max Cherry, yeah, Max. See, the thing about him is that he was so natural. I mean, you just got the impression that they instead of a role that he had to kind of rehearse to get into, they just kind of made the part into something that he already is, because he's just so natural in his roles.
Yeah, he is just amazing. And I think he was in the George Clooney movie in Hawaii afterward. That was good. I can't remember the name of that movie, but
yeah, that was a great movie.
Custodian. I can't remember what it's called, but yeah.
I remember.
So speaking of Jackie Brown, Pam Grier was the star of that movie. She was 44 years old when she shot that movie. If you told everybody to watch Young Frankenstein, I'm telling everybody, you don't have to watch the whole movie. Just go on YouTube and watch a little bit of the movie Coffee. I think it's like from 1974, but Pam Grier is the star. It's really cheesy. It's everything you want in a 70s. You know, they have the car chases that just go on forever, and people just shoot each other like it's nothing. And but she was beautiful in that movie, Pam Grier, and she Foxy Brown and Coffee were the two movies she was in. Foxy Brown was just kind of a ripoff of Coffee, but they're just hilarious to go back and watch that 70s cheesy stuff.
Was it Foxy Brown? Is that what the name of the movie was? Or was it Jackie Brown? Or what was it?
She played Foxy Brown, Foxy Brown, and then Jackie Brown was the later in the 90s was the Quentin Tarantino movie, yeah.